Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, Teresa is back on the show, filling in for Gina Grad and doing a fantastic job as per usual. So we tell some old time stories and get some news going. First, I'll tell you about the Pure Talk. Oh, man. If your cellular plan is Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, you're paying way too much for the exact same coverage as you could get with Pure Talk. Look, where your bill shows data usage, the average person uses less than 4 gigs a month, but big carriers charge you for unlimited data. So you're paying for it, but you're not using it. Pure Talk saves the average person over $400 a year, unlimited talk and text and 2 gigs of data, all just for $20 a month. If you go over the usage, they don't charge you for it. Go to puretalkusa.com, enter the promo code ADAMPODCAST, and save 50% off your first month. They don't do the big advertisers. They don't have the expensive stores in the real estate, and they pass the savings on to you. puretalkusa.com, promo code ADAMPODCAST. Pure Talk, simply smarter, wireless.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
I got good news and bad news, folks. Good news, a new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived at CorollaDrinks.com. Bad news, we no longer have the offerings from Vinny Tortorich and the fine folks at Chateau Spill. Fear not, you can get more bottles of the stain-removing sorcery at hatestains.com. And for more of Vinny's delicious nut butter, go to nsngfoods.com. A big thank you to Vinny and Hate Stains for September's Adam's Monthly Nut. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, and brought to you by Bet Online, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, singer-songwriter Patti Smyth and sportscaster Jim Gray. With Gina Grad on news, with Bald Brian on sound effects, Jeff Cesario with the sports, and Teresa Strasser filling in for news, and now... He thought the debate between the number two and the potential number two was a bunch of number two. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. A judgment, get it on, man. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Thanks for checking us out, and good day, Teresa Strasser.
Good day, Adam Carolla. Nice to see you.
And Bald Brian.
How about you leave the joking to Adam?
I look forward to speaking to Teresa Strasser whenever I can. I'm oftentimes befuddled, bemused, and bewitched by how many people don't listen to me on an almost daily basis about almost everything all of the time. And not only do they not listen to me, they think I'm wrong and an asshole about everything. And my argument is kind of like, well, whose warehouse are we standing in and who started off worse off, me or you? And if I started off worse off than you and we're standing in my warehouse surrounded by my million-dollar cars, and maybe some of the decisions I make are either accurate or on point. But either way, I always say to everyone when they ask me, Adam, what is your greatest lament and disappointment as an adult? And actually, nobody asked me that. I say, guess what my greatest lament,
if one were to ask,
is as an adult? And they go, I don't know. Please tell me. And I say, nobody listens to me. And then I pause and I said, except for Teresa Strasser. She's the only one as an adult who's actually listened to anything I've ever said to them. And for that reason, she is not only one of my favorites, but a fan favorite as well. Now, I don't know how that translates for you, but how does that translate to you? Because I always stop myself when I'm explaining Nobody listens to what I have to tell them, either advice-wise, occasionally building, but not very often even with building. But yet, not you, Teresa. You actually listen.
I do. I take your advice very seriously. And in fact, when I was on your live show, you were on stage in Salt Lake City. I was here in my closet in Phoenix. And you said that you knew that I was going to end up staying in Phoenix, that people thought she'll be back in a year and you knew that I'd be here. And I was talking to Daniel about it. And I said, he knew before I knew. And we decided that you just know things. And I think that's one of the reasons people enjoyed calling into Loveline, because you do have a knack and an instinct for predicting people's behavior. Moreover, I do take your advice seriously because you were not born on third thinking you hit a triple.
Well, thank you. But now here's an overarching question. And I don't have Teresa's bio, by the way, Kaylin, for plugs or whatever, if in fact we had that to begin with. But a bigger question then, and I channel Dr. Drew when I say this. Dr. Drew is, first off, a physician, and then secondly, has, you know, 35 years clinical experience, and people just tell him his business all day long. Like, it's just all fucking day long. And it drives him nuts. It really drives him nuts because he has a field of expertise and people just kind of either brush him off or go, well, you know, I got a friend who operates one of those falafel carts in Manhattan and he says, right. And it's like, it's true. It's like, why? What's going on? I'm a physician. Why don't you listen to me? You know, and I cannot tell you how much it drives him insane. For me, the only good part is being a carpenter, because no one argues with you about mortise joints or finger joints or bevels or Roman OGs on carbide tipped, half inch shank router bits. Like, everyone just leaves you alone. They've never heard of it. Everything else, you're a fucking idiot. You have no idea what you're talking about. But yet, I do feel like I really consider sources. I really consider sources. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I also consider motives. You see, if I'm watching Fox versus watching CNN, I don't think, oh, that person's stupid. I go, oh, that person has a different motive. So I'm factoring that in. But when I'm just talking to individuals, I really listen to the people. Like, you know, I had a long talk with Jimmy Kimmel the other day. I listen to what Jimmy Kimmel has to say because he's done so much. He's been so successful. And it's not about, oh, so he's got a big fat bank account, so you got to listen to him. No, that's not it. He's done so many different endeavors and had so many different experiences that I would tend to really listen when he talks, and I feel that way about a lot of people. Why isn't there more of that? Like, I talk to people all the time that just sort of, they just sort of look at me and go, okay, that's your opinion. But they're driving an Uber and they have two roommates and they've been divorced three times. Like, what is that? Why is that? Yes, Brian.
I've long suspected that there's an unspoken little bit of shame in that exchange. Like, if you're the person driving the Uber and making air quotes or whatever, you're the person looking up as opposed to looking down. I think there's a little bit of it's a referendum on you if you are taking advice from someone as an adult, which is a completely wrong way of thinking. But I think that's a thing where it's like, well, I got my shit figured out. So, you know, keep your shit to yourself or whatever that obstinate point of view is, where you're resistant to information because you're an adult, you got shit figured out. It's like, no, you don't. We can all take advice at all points in our life.
And I agree. And it's also, there's also another component of it, which is, I always think back on 3 years ago when we were sitting around the adults table in Maui and I was explaining the reason why they don't enforce the leaf blower laws in California is because everyone who operates a leaf blower is a poor Hispanic and they don't like the optics of busting or fining poor Hispanic people. And it was a story I read in the Los Angeles Times 20 years ago, and it stuck with me. Yeah, it's not only a law, but it's the optics of the law. And if you're giving someone a hefty fine for speeding, you know, taking their Jaguar in the diamond lane and speeding, then fine, so be it. That blonde guy gets a hefty fine for jumping into the diamond lane. But the coming down on the poor Hispanics, it's bad optics. And that's why there's a law on the books, but it's not enforced. But the story of that story was everyone else at the table was shouting me down and sort of calling me a racist and telling me I didn't know what I was talking about and sort of doing that thing where, you know, sometimes when chicks eat brunch, they just go, no, no. But it's like, why don't you know I know what I'm talking about? Why don't you think I know what I'm talking about? Why, where do you think I got this supposition? How do you think I just made this up? I'm just some, you know, drunken miner who's come down from the hills and is like slapping his fucking knee with his hat, just spitting out yarns about seeing Bigfoot and Sasquatch up in them there hills. Like, I am an intelligent person who researches things, and I'm actually giving you a viable answer as to why this. Here's an answer to why this isn't enforced. It's a perfectly viable answer. It's really one of the only answers that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Why are all eight people telling me to shut up? Now, is it because the lead person told me to shut up and the other seven lemmings jumped on with them? Because that's a part of it.
Well, they fell in line.
Well, there's definitely a part of that's definitely an element to what's going on these days. But why doesn't anyone go, where did you hear this? And
They just dismissed it out of hand. You didn't even bother saying I read this in the LA Times or whatever it was.
It was just sort of a chorus of you're wrong. That's what I got based on what it was. Is I brought up an ethnicity and they didn't like that. That was the big problem. Like as if that's a big factor. You know what I mean? And I had brought up an ethnicity and they didn't like the idea that the white guy was bringing up the ethnicity. So they just kind of shouted it down, which is a new era we're at now, too, which is it happens to be so. Why does that make me a racist? I am passing along information that is so. I know you don't like the fact that I said poor Mexicans in my diatribe, but that's not a reason to say the information is inaccurate.
You know what you pointed out that I think of a lot? Back in our FM radio days, you would make this point consistently, and pardon me because I'm not going to capture it the way you do, but there are people who are sort of bumbling and inept generally. But when it comes to that one thing they care about, suddenly they are the most productive human being ever.
It's the Mike August corollary.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. And I've recently heard scientific backing for something which was just something that you were intuiting. I heard this great interview with Ken Jennings from Jeopardy, and it was talking about memory. And people think, like a game show nerd like Ken Jennings must have an incredible memory. But it's just that we all remember things we care about better, and a nerd just cares about more things and is curious about more things. So they it seems like they remember more. And I thought, this is Adam's point. When you care about something, it does activate a different part of your brain.
Well, I always kind of use the example of everybody has the thing that they're interested in, or at least that we're aware that they're interested in. You know, so Lynette likes Bruce Springsteen stuff. Brian likes sushi. I don't want to oversimplify everyone's life. Teresa loves Suns and baseball. Like, you have your things. I love cars. Okay. I don't space out on stuff that has to do with cars. You know, you don't say to me, when's Paul Newman? You just bought your 13th Paul Newman race car. It's coming from Florida. When's it going to arrive? I don't go, what? I don't think you told me about that. No, I know right when it's going to arrive. So I am good. Now, why am I good? Well, I'm motivated. I'm interested. Right. And so then you go, well, what about changing the, you know, everybody, let's say the same person might have a water filter that's under their sink and it's a cartridge and you need to change it twice a year. So according to the manufacturer of the filter that comes out of the sink. Well, that gets spaced out on, right? That falls by the wayside. That sloughs off, right? Now, why is it? Why do you know this date and not that date? Why are you interested? Well, obviously, one thing you're interested in and the other thing you're not. Now, here's my point. Why not just have one setting? Why not just be sort of as interested or as responsible about the stuff you don't want to do or you don't care about? Or forget about as responsible. Let's see if we can get to the halfway point of being halfway as responsible or interested in stuff that isn't the stuff that's on the tip of your tongue that you care about. Yes, Brian.
You're 100% right. The water filter example is a good example. I doubt Mr. Kenmore himself changes the water filter every whatever it is for right. 6 months or whatever. Number one, it's just not exciting. Number two, it's out of sight, out of mind. It's either inside your fridge or it's underneath your sink or whatever. We've talked on this show about know thyself, mm-hmm. i.e. like know your weaknesses, you know, work around them, whatever. Mm. Like, go to Amazon, put it on subscribe and save, set it up for every 6 months, and it'll show up every 6 months. And you'll be like, oh, new filter, time to, you'll be in your hand. You have no choice but take it out of the box and hold it. And at that point, just change the goddamn thing. Outsmart yourself. I did that because I would go 9-12 months between water filters.
Well, but it's easy for you to outsmart you. I got to outsmart me, and I'm at a genius level. So good luck beating me.
I aspire to that level of outsmartingness.
So, now, Brian, Brian is 100% right, and I'll just put an addendum.
Let him talk.
Sorry.
I'm making Brian writer, and then we're going to move on to the next thing that Teresa wants to talk about. If you are not inherently interested in something like when to change the filter, you must come out with modalities to fool yourself. You now have to trick yourself into being interested, and that is, of course, famously Dr. Drew showing up with the flu vaccine. It needed to be refrigerated. He didn't want to forget it here, but he had to put it in the refrigerator. So in went his keys into the refrigerator as well. So it was impossible for him to leave without the refrigerated vaccinations. And we all know that if you put the vaccinations in the refrigerator 20 feet from where I'm sitting, come in here and do a bunch of podcasts with me and then hustle off to your radio job,
I'll forget it.
You're going to forget it. Yes. Sorry, Teresa.
So to a couple of your points that you should consider the source, this is why I would take your advice seriously. For one thing, speaking of Dr. Drew, you've had longstanding professional and personal relationships, and that's not something that everyone can say. So I remember taking it very seriously when I had a little issue with Dave Damashek. And I was really upset.
Wait a minute. Sir Walter Raleigh of the FM radio dial?
Exactly.
Shut up.
And you told me, listen, this is going to blow over. Just keep your shit together for 6 months and no one's going to remember this. It's going to be fine. Everyone's going to get along. And I took it seriously because I thought, Adam is somebody who knows how to have long-standing professional relationships with people, and that is just what I did, and everything was fine, and we all worked together.
The radio show lasted 3 years.
And also, so you mentioned considering the source, and you mentioned the Little League thing, and I was thinking about this because, so as you know, the kids play Little League, which was, of course, canceled this year due to the pandemic, but here in our neighborhood, because we're in Phoenix, spring training, golf, sunshine, there are a lot of former major leaguers that play here. And when my husband was coaching Little League last season, there was a guy who used to be on the Dodgers. He's a great player, great athlete, good guy, good dad, coaches two of his kids. And I noticed that of the 16 teams, all of the teams would take their shitty kids and make them be catcher. But on this guy's team, he took his best kid, who was his own
Smart.
Son. And he forced him to be catcher. And I said to Daniel, listen, if this guy is putting his own kid in the catcher's gear and making him catch, and that's the best player on his team, and his team, like, we should be doing that because I don't know anything about baseball. I don't know anything about what makes the best battery, but I know he knows more about baseball than anyone out here. And that's what he's doing. And that's what we did.
I got it.
one.
I've got to say, the way I was able to win the Toyota Grand Prix Celebrity and Pro Race back-to-back a few years ago is I just went to the fastest guy out there, one of the fastest guys out there, Tanner Faust, stunt driver, does all the Fast and Furious movies and all that, professional rally driver and everything. And I just said to him, so what do we want to do? Like, what can I do to get faster? Where's a good place to pass? And he just said, at the very end of the back straightaway, there's the front straightaway, that's shoreline, and then there's the back straightaway. It's a little bit shorter. He said, at the very end, on the day before we do the race or the celebrity race, they do a whole expose, or they do a whole demonstration on drifting. These guys get in their drift cars and they burn rubber and they slide all the way around and smoke's coming out everywhere. And he said, they do it on that corner. They just go around that one corner and they drift around in a circle and the fans go nuts and the guys light up the tires. And he said, that corner, because that's where they drift, has a ton of rubber just laid down on the asphalt. It's like stuck to the asphalt because that's where they do their drifting. So that corner, you can break way later and go in a lot hotter and you'll get the grip because that corner has rubber laid down all across it. And I said, thanks. And that's where I passed everyone. And that's how I won the race. And that's what I knew. But it's only because I went and talked to the guy and he told me what the fuck to do. Otherwise, I would have no thoughts about the drifting competition that took place the day before on that corner. So yeah, there's things you can learn, or you can just decide that you're Leonardo DiCaprio at the front of the Titanic and end up with Leonardo in Davy Jones' locker. All
well,
right,
you're saying
yes.
If you ask the expert and then you must embrace what they tell you, and for some reason people do not always embrace your wise words.
No, mainly no. But it's an interesting condition, and it's one I never really anticipated, as I always say, as a kid. I didn't think that was going to be a part of life. I thought you just go up to Mr. Successful Person or Mrs. Successful Person, and you would ask them things, and you would hang on their every word, and then you would go out and do your best to emulate that. I got a call up here who went to the school that Paris Hilton went to and the private school that she wants to get closed down now.
Yes.
Wow. If anyone remembers the theme of the movie, not the musical theme, but the theme in terms of the progression and the drama of the story of Billy Jack, it's quite the opposite. The kids started their own school up on the hill, and it was the evil redheaded sheriff who wanted to shut it down. But is that the role that Paris Hilton is playing? Colin, 52, North Dakota.
Hello, Adam.
Yes. You went to Provo Canyon School, and that's the Paris Hilton thing where she was talking about she was sent away for being as a disciplinarian problem or discipline problem, and she went and she said it was abusive there. Is that correct?
Well, she said that, yeah. I'm not saying it was abusive there, but I went there, and I went there that the school was not co-ed. It was guys only, so it was very different, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And what was it? What was your experience like?
Well, it was just, I was kind of a crappy kid, you know, like, I mean, I was a difficult kid, like so many of us were. And it was mostly those of us with, like, kind of rich parents, and they wanted to buy away the problem, so they'd send us there.
Right. And so how was it? Were you, you're going to be disciplined, I'm guessing, because there's a reason why you're there, but was it above and beyond? Did you think you were abused?
Well, okay, so there were two basic levels of discipline there. They had what's called a short-term removal and a long-term removal, and you would get, quote-unquote, removed to a room, like you'd stand in a small room on basically a timeout. So you'd do like 15 minutes on, 2 minutes, you know, resting, but you'd stare at the wall for 15 minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. Then a long-term thing, you put into a more secure unit and have all your privileges taken away. As far as like abuse, these days that counts for really heavy psychological abuse. To me, it doesn't, and it's just what we did, but I could see how a Hilton might think so. I don't know, but I never saw anyone get beat up or anything like that.
Here's the problem. I don't think there's a possibility of going back and sifting through the wreckage of any boarding school experience or any marriage without finding abuse. You know what I mean? I mean, especially by today's standard of what abuse is, and especially since it's kind of in the eye of the beholder. So yeah. I was assuming that Paris Hilton's abuse, quote unquote, was more discipline. And you can kind of go, is that right? Is that wrong? Is that effective? Answer is, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily defend it, but I don't know if it's abuse, especially when you look back historically at what abuse was in facilities. Yeah. But here's a question. Did it work on you, Colin?
Actually, you could say it did, actually, very much. Just being removed from all my freedoms that I had, which weren't really serving me very well. One thing that got me there was that I was smoking weed every day, all day long, and cutting class from the age of like 14, 15 years old. And when I got out of there after about 9 or 10 months, I got stoned one time, and I just hated the feeling of it. And I actually started getting better grades and stuff. I just liked being more in control. So for me, it was good to have a reboot, to be taken away from my regular life and, you know, at least get me a chance at getting some discipline. Now, after that, I kind of went off the rails in other ways later in my life. But if I'd have kept on my path, I think I would have turned out a lot worse. Yeah.
Are you you're calling from North Dakota, which is an interesting place for former rich kid to be residing. Is there something
right
to that?
Well, actually, I've got a whole story about that, a whole theory in my own mind about that. I kind of feel like I'm the anti the bizarro Adam Carolla, where I grew up with a similar mom, but a lot of money. And then so I didn't have any gravity. I had to get that gravity through my life. And I just really, I feel like I grew up like maybe in the last 5 or 10 years. And now I'm a truck driver in the oil fields of North Dakota. But things are really good for me. And I'm a lot happier than I ever was when I was in my 20s and owned a bar and had a Ferrari and all that other stuff.
Is your giving people stuff is about the most nefarious trick you can play on them. Like really giving people stuff, you want to ruin young people, just lavish them with whatever they want, and watch how fast they spin out into addiction and depression. But what did your parents do that made them rich?
Well, that's part of the problem, I think. First of all, I'm from Salt Lake City, and my kids live there, and I go back there and spend most of my time there. In fact, I just missed you. I couldn't get off work because the work is so good right now. But anyway,
yeah, I was just there.
I really wanted to get tickets and all that stuff. I just couldn't quite make it down for that. But the thing is, my mom, so where the money in my family came from is that my mom she inherited a lot of money from her parents. Her dad was a very wealthy banker and all that stuff. Oh. So it's not much that I had money. I was inheriting money, but also my mom grew up a rich kid. And my mom, when I say my mom, it reminds me of when you talk about your mom. They seem similar because my mom just seemed depressed most of the time. She had her own things where she's a professor, you know, or tried to become a professor, did most of that work and stuff.
Hi, Colin. I'm growing weary. But
wow. Showing him the same cold shoulder as mom showed him for so many years.
You went to the school, they disciplined you, but it was all in sort of context. It helped. Then you came out. You got a little too much too soon, but now you found your roots as a long haul trucker living out of North Dakota. And, again, really just the only thing money, the only thing that I can really tell that money really does is you're able to check a box off. And when you're poor, as I was for so many years, I always thought what stood in between me and happiness was money. And all people that are poor and unhappy will probably tell you if they just had money or the things money buys, a nice car, a nice home, vacations, whatever, you know, so on and so forth, then they would be happy. And the only thing money is good for really is realizing that it doesn't make you happy. It doesn't really change the construct of your personality. And then you are sort of able to go, well, I don't have to pursue money anymore to make me happy because I understood that that's not the cure for whatever's going on. I can now pursue, theoretically, other modalities that you don't think of pursuing when you're poor because you just think it's money that's not making you happy. All these guys that are super uber rich in Silicon Valley, tech guys and everything, that's why they're all doing their own weird stuff, because all the money in the world doesn't make them happy. They have to go convene with nature and, you know, go sit in a yurt with a yogi in Burning Man or whatever. They have to go do something that's not money driven. All right, let me hit LifeLock here. Certain behaviors make you more vulnerable for identity theft, like using the same password on every account and oversharing personal information on social media. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our information at risk on the internet. You can miss certain threats by just monitoring your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information, they will send you an alert. It's almost 2021, people. You're online. Your info's out there. It's convenient. You're shopping. Now it's time to take care of yourself with LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
No, we prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can find out if your information is on the dark web. Get your free dark web scan at LifeLock.com/scan. Pick the plan that's right for you and save up to 25% off your first year with promo code Adam. That's a free scan at LifeLock.com/scan and 25% off with promo code Adam.
All right. Let's see. Something that happened last week, I never really got into it. We never really discussed it. I don't know if Brian and Teresa have seen it. Do you see that tape of Rick Moranis getting punched?
I did not.
I saw the story and I saw the surveillance footage of what I assume was the assailant. I don't know if I ever saw how the actual punch land, but yes, of course, more of the story.
Oh, and Teresa, no.
No, you mean Little Shop of Horrors, Rick Moranis?
The Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
Who would punch him?
Random, probably.
And I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
Probably random, angry black dude, I think. I have a theory, which is there's some of this going on in our society. And I think we're essentially, our news cycle is convincing black people that white people don't like them or hate them, or they have a target on their back, or they have this sort of pre-existing condition, which is being born black in America. And we never stop talking about systemic racism and all that. And so it would make sense to me that a certain amount of young people would hear that information, ingest it, and say, fuck it, I'm punching Rick Moranis. That's my theory. I don't know how you could go any other way. You couldn't just sit around and never stop talking about how racist this country is without it manifesting itself in some way, shape, or form. I don't know how it would go any other way, but, or maybe the guy just fucking hated SCTV.
I am your father's brother's nephew's cousin's former roommate.
But he wasn't SCTV, wasn't he, or no?
Most positive. I think that's where the McKenzie.
Oh, that's
started,
where the McKenzie.
Right?
Yeah, maybe he just hated it. Yeah, the guy was probably 22, so he didn't. But Rick Moranis is just walking down the street in Manhattan. We'll show you that.
Rick Moranis hasn't been in a movie since he's been alive. This
that's
guy.
True.
Was it Honey, I Shrunk My Fuse?
I guess. Here's Rick. And he just punched him in the head and Rick dropped. And by the way, if you hit your head against the concrete when someone cold cocks you, it can fuck your shit up. I mean, look no further than the Giants fan that was jumped by the Dodgers or the Dodgers fan that was jumped by the
Giants fan.
Yeah. Yes, you punch somebody in the face. When you fall, your shoulder blades hit the ground first if you fall straight on your back, and then your head whips and hits the concrete, and it leaves you in a state that can be somewhere between knocked out and permanent paralysis and or, you know, brain damage. Like, it can be really punching someone in the face when they're walking down the street. I mean, you would much rather, if you said, what would you rather for your kid? Walking down a sidewalk and just cold cocked in the face, or, you know, hit by a delivery scooter or something like that? I'd rather have my kid hit by a scooter. Sure. I feel like there might be dislocated shoulder or broken forearm or something like that. But punched in the face, if you get cold cocked and you go out and your head whips against the concrete, then we're talking brain damage, possibly. So the great Rick Moranis. But I don't know if there's any follow up or I don't know if there's any story about it.
I was just going to ask you that. And for some reason, I feel like he's Canadian. Would that have happened in Canada? I feel like Canadians don't just...
That's why he fled Canada. That's why he escaped.
No,
Canada?
I do. I don't think... And now also it's a weird optics thing because a young black man punched him and he can't really come out and get too much into it. Like, I want a bounty on his head or any of that stuff. But I don't know if they caught the guy. And to me, the scariest people in our society are the people who can do this, because that guy was literally just going from point A to point B past a random human being who's 65 years old and 5 foot nothing and just smashed him in the face. That is a scary individual. You know what I don't get? What use are surveillance cameras if we have them? We see the crime, we see the person, and we never make the arrest, so they never did catch the guy.
Ask every Ring doorbell owner who has a package stolen off their porch. Someone break into the house.
The suspect remains at large, and the NYPD has offered a $2,500 reward for information leading to his arrest.
That's an unusually small amount.
I was going to say, like, what if they did that to George Clooney or Kevin Bacon? Do you think it'd be a little more than $2,500?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to believe that. I got to believe if that were Tom Hanks, there'd be a little more than $2,500. Like, we might hit $3,000 even.
Well, why don't we take a 5-minute break?
Yeah, why don't we? All right.
Thanks, Rick.
You guys.
Thanks, Rick.
I was talking about my most miserable road trip story when I was talking to Eric Stromer. And I'll tell you that in a second. Let's take a drive with Geico. Geico, everybody, want to save a little money on your auto insurance? You can do it at Geico. And, you know, I'm supposed to talk about one of my favorite drives, but what I realized, I'd rather talk about one of my least favorite drives with Geico. I was, I haven't told the story in a kajillion years, but I was telling it to Stromer doing an Ace on the Roof, which is, I've been eating a lot of Zanku chicken, a lot of shawarma nice. These days. I don't know. Don't sleep on the shawarma.
I love the shawarma.
The tahini sauce, is that the one I like? That's all good.
That's the, like, creamier, yeah.
Yeah.
More liquidy.
Yeah, the liquidy one. Goddamn, that's good. It's good. You get the chicken and you get the garlic paste. Put that garlic paste with the chicken, but...
Shawarma is like the thin chicken they carve off, right?
Well, yeah. This is where the problem comes in the worst drive ever for the Ace Man. I was I love that place, and I used to house sit my buddy Alex's house out. Remember when house sitting was a big deal?
Ooh, that was a win.
You get to house sit. Like, they got a king size bed, wall to wall carpet, central air. bunch of
cable
like CDs, a sofa, like a regular sofa you can sit on and stuff. Like, it was a big deal. It's like 2,200 feet in the San Fernando Valley. This is huge. Park my car in a garage. This is awesome. And I was house sitting, and I used to go to the Zanku Chicken that was over on Sherman Way. Sepulveda and like Burbank. And I walked in there once and I said, it was like 25 years ago. I said, give me the 50-50 shawarma plate. Now, here's the way I roll. My daughters figured this one out too, which I'm proud of. They have the rotisserie, the vertical rotisserie thing, and they're about 4 feet apart, maybe 3 feet apart. One's got all the chicken stacked on it, and the other's got the beef stacked on it, and they get the electric knife and they skim it off. Nothing better. It just falls onto the into the styrofoam container, you know? And $7.99 for either the chicken or the beef. So I then said, give me the suicide. Give me the 50-50. Half chicken, half beef. By the way, that's the way to go, everybody.
Don't say suicide at Zanku.
So it's another story.
It's another story.
So the 19-year-old gal behind the counter went, I can't do that. And I said, I'm not asking for twice as much meat. I'm saying give me the same amount of meat, just make it 50% chicken and 50% beef. And she said, yeah, we're not allowed to do that. And I said, I don't get why you're not allowed to do that if they're the same price, which they are, and I'm not asking for more, then why not? And she said, my favorite answer on any business is when they do this one. I know. Everyone asks for it. I always go like, well, I know. If everyone's asking for it, by the way, why don't you just put a piece of plywood up where the door is and get up on the roof with a rifle? Because that'll really end this mess of people coming in and asking for stuff, you know. She goes, I can't do it. I go, okay, get your manager. Because I order this every time I come here, and I've never seen you before, and you're telling me you don't do it, but every other time I come here, I order it. And she goes, my manager's not here. And I said, good.
Then it'll even better.
Yeah, it'll be just between the two of us. Give me the 50-50. And she said, no. And I was like, ugh, just do it. And she's like, no. And I said, you know what? Now, here's where the world's worst road trip comes in. I'm in deep Van Nuys area. It's 3 p.m. on a weekday. And there's one in deep Hollywood. And I go, I'm going to the one on Western and Sunset. And she's like, knock yourself out. I go, fine. I get in my car, and about 55 minutes later, I pull into the Zanku Chicken on Western and Sunset or Santa Monica or wherever the hell it is. There's a Zanku that's way over there. And I walk into the place and I go, give me a 50-50 shawarma plate. And the guy goes, you want a drink with that? And I thought, God damn, that witch. That witch just watched me walk right out of there, get in the car, drive an hour, go to the next Zanku Chicken, dreaming of shawarma all the way, and that guy behind that counter had zero problems with it. So that is the worst road trip I've ever taken. Sponsored by Geico. Visit Geico today. Switch your car insurance over. Doesn't take any time. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your auto insurance, and you can do it with your boat or RV or homeowners or renters as well. All right. We should take a quick break, and then we're going to do the news with Teresa Strasser. Let me just make sure I'm in the right place here. Yeah, news with Teresa Strasser right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Adam, my name's James. I just want to tell you one of the most relatable things that you do on your show, on any of your shows, is that little noise you make when you are thoroughly disgusted with someone, and it goes like, ugh. Keep doing that shit, man. I love you.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Ugh. Teresa Strauss is here. She's got the news queued up, and we'll talk to Patty Smythe from Scandal and Beyond after that. What do you got? Do we have an intro?
Just a quick update for you from the New York Post on actor Rick Moranis. He emerged in public today to grocery shop nearly a week after he was sucker punched during the random attack that we just shared with you. So it seems that he is doing all right.
Yeah, we should. I'm not one of these guys that likes to get in and change the name of everything, but sucker punch kind of makes it your fault. You know what
You're
I mean?
You're right. That is so victim blamey.
I know. Sucker rape victim.
Exactly.
Doesn't work, does it?
Does not work at all.
Right. The music sucker ethnic cleanser. All right. See, it doesn't work. He's not a sucker. He's walking down the street. He was felon punched.
There you go.
Next time Garagos is in, call it the sucker genocide.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
see how that goes.
He's not going to like if I replace Armenian with sucker. Yeah.
Sucker sex trafficker?
Doesn't work. Yeah, you're right.
Does not work.
Yeah, he was minding his own P's and Q's, and he was punched. But he's not the sucker. He's the victim.
Eddie Van Halen, as you must have already heard, died yesterday. Obviously, the music community was rocked by his death, and I wanted to share some tributes with you that poured in.
Get it? Rocked. Patti Smythe was, as Brian pointed out yesterday, asked by Eddie Van Halen to replace David Lee Roth with Van Halen after.
We'll have to ask her about
that. We'll have to talk to her about that. But yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think she said that there was too much partying going on with the band. And at the time she was asked, she was very pregnant. And so it just didn't fit in with her lifestyle. That's what I read. But I'm very interested to talk about it with her. She would have been an amazing addition to that band, if you ask me. David Lee Roth tweeting, what a long, great trip it's been. Valerie Bertinelli.
You know, high school yearbook quote?
Yeah, really.
And then he followed it up with "Have a great summer," which was soon.
KIT.
That's
stay
right.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful. This is Valerie Bertinelli. I'm so grateful. Wolfie and I were able to hold you in your last moments. I will see you in our next life, my love. Lynette Carolla.
Weren't they divorced a long time ago?
You know, she was at his bedside when he passed. They had been divorced a long time. His new wife Janie was there, and Valerie Bertinelli was also there.
Awkward.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Lynette Carolla, also a fan.
At his bedside?
She loves Van Halen.
She was also, that was so strange. She was also at his bedside. She posted, the soundtrack of my youth. I hope his music inspires up-and-coming musicians and bands born out of backyards of suburbia. He was an iconic hero in our high school, a real L.A. Pasadena boy gone too soon. Now, some of you might not know that Gene Simmons had been an early booster of Van Halen. He even helped them record a demo before they got signed. He posted, my heart is broken. Eddie was not only a guitar god, but a genuinely beautiful soul. Rest in peace, Eddie. Lenny Kravitz, heaven will be electric tonight.
I don't know. Are you guys bothered by those, you know, when they do that, here's what's going to be in heaven. There's a Righteous Brothers song. I'm looking at you, Kalen, there's a Righteous Brothers called Rock and Roll Heaven, and you guys have heard this song before. Uh-huh. It's the Righteous Brothers version of Abraham, Martin, and John. It's like, if you know anybody here, see my old friend Martin, can you tell me where he's gone? It's a sing about Abraham Lincoln and John Kennedy, and this is the Righteous Brothers singing about a rock and roll heaven and all the dead rockers that are now up there putting on a show. It's kind of okay. It's a little corny. If you believe in forever, 1974. So I don't think Eddie Van Halen's on this list. If there's a rock and roll heaven, well, you know what? Ben!
Jimmy gave us rainbows,
Hendrix?
Yep. Janice. And Otis. See the way they do that?
Sing a song to light my fire.
Light my fire.
Remember Jim that way.
Oh, Jim Morrison. So they got a hell of a band.
I like that line.
Life is just a one-night stand. All right, little Righteous Brother trivia for you guys.
In stark contrast to that, do you want to hear a little Eruption recorded in New Haven, Connecticut, 1986, live?
Yeah. Yeah,
widely considered one of the greatest guitar solos of all time.
Yeah, well, speaking of old stories, I got an Eruption story.
Oh,
oh yeah, that was one of the clearest. You know, there's those sort of bad bottom out days you remember from your early life. Probably less as you get older, but for me, having a motorcycle towed and then having to like hitchhike home and all those things. Some of it was the byproduct of not having a cell phone, not having a credit card, not having cash, like not having anything and sort of getting screwed and stuff broke down and, you know, you had to walk or sleep by the side of the road or whatever. I got a few of those stories. This Eruption story is probably, It's bottom five. It's probably not bottom three, but bottom five is my Eruption story. I'll tell you about that in 1 second. Let me just give a little love to a new sponsor, Thuma. Thuma, you never think about your bed frame, but you buy the mattress and they throw the bed frame in for free. And, well, you get what you pay for, don't pay for. Give your bed and bedroom an upgrade, and it's the bed that needs the upgrade by Thuma. This is really interesting. I was just looking at their website. So they have really nice-looking bed frames that are nice wood. They have thousands of hours creating the perfect platform for your bed. Like, you're always thinking about how nice your mattress and your box spring and whatever it is, but then you get this weird sheet metal, crappy Chinese bed frame. Get a beautiful frame, supportive, breathable, naturally minimizes noises, backed with a lifetime warranty, shipped right to your door, takes 5 minutes to assemble, no tools. You can, it helps create a space underneath, by the way, 9 inches of clearance between the bed and the floor, so you can slide the workout machine under there. Net carbon zero. They plant a tree for every frame sold. Go on their website. Look how nice this stuff is. It's Thuma, right, Dawson?
Upgrade your space with The Bed by Thuma. And now listeners can use the code ADAM to receive a $25 credit towards your purchase of The Bed, plus free shipping. Go to thuma.co/ADAM. That's thuma.co/ADAM. And enter ADAM at checkout for a $25 credit. thuma.co/ADAM and enter code ADAM.
I was living in my small first apartment with Donnie, or sleeping on the same futon, living on Laurel Canyon. And for some reason, one weekday, I wasn't working and he wasn't working and we were just sitting at home. I was at the time making probably $8 an hour working as a carpenter, not really carpenter, it was like a laborer. And missing work, I used to not be able to really enjoy it because my entire life, if I missed work, I didn't get paid for that day. Mm-hmm. So missing work is kind of like, well, you're living paycheck to paycheck and you've missed a day of work. You don't get paid. So enjoy yourself, but I don't know how much you can enjoy yourself. Now, if you're getting paid and you like stay home, you're like, good, I'm going to see a movie and I'm going to go out to eat. But you, the notion of spending money when you actually weren't getting paid that day kind of sucked. Anyway, I wasn't working. He wasn't working. And it was the middle of the day. And I realized that I had to go to Home Savings and Loan on Laurel Canyon and Ventura Boulevard and try to deposit something in my checking account because I knew our rent check was coming close to not to bouncing. And I went to Home Savings and Loan, and when I walked up, there was a guy with a van, and he was selling speakers. And he did that move where he's like, hey, man, come over here. And I was just the kind of person, I was like, all right. He said, come over there. I'll go over there. And I just walked over there, and he's like, you want some speakers? And I'm like, no, I mean, not really. I don't need them. And he's like, you need these speakers. And I said, well, I don't really have any money, but I was going to like deposit $80 in the bank or something. He's like, I'll take that money. You take the speakers. And I'm like, okay. So I took the two speakers. I never went to the bank, and I drove home. And when I got home, I took the two speakers out. They were giant speakers. And I said to Donnie, let's hook these bad boys up and let's test these speakers out. He's like, okay. Middle of the week, middle of the day, plugged in the speakers in our very small apartment in North Hollywood, and he dropped in the CD Van Halen and went right to Eruption because that's how we were going to test our speakers out. And I didn't even really know Eruption that well. I knew the Van Halen hits, but I didn't really know Eruption. And he then proceeded to turn it to 11 and just crank that thing. And he's like, you want to give these speakers a try? We're going to give them a try. And he just cranked Eruption all the way up. And at a certain point in the middle of Eruption, in the middle of the day, in the middle of the week, I couldn't hear somebody knocking, but I could feel it like kunk, kunk, kunk. I could feel the concussion of somebody pounding on our front door. And I opened the front door, and it was our landlord, Jim. And Jim was standing there because we had bounced the rent check. And then Jim proceeded to look into our apartment because, you know, when you live in a little apartment, you open the front door, you can see everything. That's all there. We had a slot car track set up. We had rabbits running around. There was a bong in the infield of the slot car track. And it was the middle of the day. And it was the middle. And that's the only time he'd ever come to the unit. So in his world, he got out of the car and could hear Eruption coming down the street. Like he parked on the street and could hear it down the street. And he had no context. He thought we sat around all day and just played Eruption as loud as we could. And once he stood at the door, he announced that he had, that the last check had bounced, and he was thinking about evicting us. And I then wrote him another check. And I remember he got to that point. And I don't know if you guys have got to the point with your parents back in the day or counselors or teachers where they get beyond mad. They get into disgust and they get into a sort of anguish, disgust and
despair
and despair. Like he just kept going. I don't know. I just don't know. I just don't know what we're doing. Like, I don't know. Like, he wasn't even angry. He was just like, I don't know what to do with you guys. I don't know how to fix this, whatever you guys are. But I wrote him another check on the spot. He then drove straight to Home Savings and Loan, and that check bounced as well. And that's
Do you think he made that disgusted sound that you make? The bank.
Yeah. He was Jim was Jim Posel was the guy's name, and I'd never forget that guy. And he went straight to the bank. I don't know if he bought another set of speakers, but he did bounce that check. And that was it. Eventually, we moved out about a year later. But it was Eruption that we were playing on. We were testing my new speakers out with.
It's a good way to christen new speakers. I don't know if Dawson's able to talk during this, but I assume that was important to him as a musician when he was learning. A lot of guitar players try and learn that song.
I was never even in the ballpark of having the chance of sitting next to someone who is that good.
It's that challenging to play.
So no?
Didn't even try.
No.
Yeah.
Adam, when I was a college student in the late 90s, there was still dudes selling speakers out of vans, which some of the guys, you know, friends of mine, people I knew, bought up. Like, how does this, I don't really call it a scam, because you get a speaker, albeit a low quality speaker, but how does this racket work? Why are there so many speakers being sold out of the backs of vans?
I imagine somebody works at a Kenwood stereo manufacturing plant in, you know, Inglewood, and works the graveyard shift and like pushes 10 out the door to their buddy in the van, and then the guy in the van shows up at the home saving and loans parking lot. But I don't remember them being a brand on these things. I don't know if you pop it off. I don't know. I cannot answer you that. All I can tell you is I was so dumb and so naive, and my self-esteem was so low that if someone's went, you want these speakers, right? I like didn't want to upset them. I was like, sure, I want those speakers. Okay. I didn't have any money. That was the last of the money I had, and it should have gone toward rent.
You were sucker grifted.
Sucker grift. That's exactly right. All right, let me hit our crowd here. Wish you were in early on the best performing IPOs of 2019, 2020. With our crowd, accredited investors have access to invest directly, easily, and most importantly, early. Our crowd investors benefit from companies IPOing like Beyond Meat or being bought by companies like Intel, Nike, Microsoft, and Oracle. Our crowd's investment professionals review some of the most promising private companies and startups in the world and ultimately offer accredited investors the opportunity to invest the same terms, with the same terms, so you can invest with the same terms. They've invested in hundreds of millions of dollars, and accredited investors can participate in single company deals for as little is 10,000, right, Dawson?
Today, you can join our crowd's investment in Memic. Memic explains that their tiny robotics allow surgeons to be less invasive and safely perform gynecological surgeries so women heal faster and have less scarring. Memic is a much-needed innovation in the rapidly growing multi-billion-dollar robotic surgery market. You can get in early on Memic and other unique opportunities at ourcrowd.com/Adam. If you're interested in investing, you need to join our crowd. Our crowd account is free. Just go to OURCROWD.com/Adam.
What else we got, Teresa Strauss?
Well, speaking of grift, you don't hear about library grift very much, but there's a news story out of Austin, Texas today involving just that. You love a library, Adam, because
that's the
place.
That's my temple. That's where I go to unwind.
That's where they hide the books.
That's where they hide the books.
There's a guy named Randall White worked for the Austin Public Library. And over the course of 12 years, he stole at least $1.3 million worth of printer toner.
I didn't see that coming.
Which is expensive. Between 2007 and 2019, he bought at least $1.5 million worth of toner for the library, which really only needed about $150,000 worth of toner. He'd then take most of the boxes of toner out with him. He told people he was taking them to other library branches, but he was really just taking them home to sell online. I guess he didn't have a van. Randall also used the library's credit cards to buy himself at least $18,000 worth of electronics, including video games, a drone, and a Roomba.
Can we do this? Could we do a 5-year plan to phase out the post office and public libraries and make all those facilities like vocational training facilities? Like, we will teach underprivileged kids a vocation at these facilities. We won't pull the plug on these places tomorrow, but 5 years from now, we will convert these places into a training facility for people that need, you know, lower income, whatever? Would you guys be down with that plan? Does anyone really need a library these days? And if not, wouldn't that same neighborhood benefit more from a like vocational training facility in that same neighborhood?
I don't know how much. I really don't know how much like libraries are utilized. It feels symbolically wrong to be closing libraries. I don't know. That's a little more feelings over facts. But I don't know. It feels wrong for our society symbolically to be closing these book warehouses and the places you can go to study or I don't know whatever.
Well,
I spent a lot of time in our library in our community in Noe Valley, San Francisco, where I grew up, because nobody was home after school and I didn't have anywhere to go. But it was generally empty. Would that space be better utilized training kids, HVAC, plumbing, welding? I don't know.
Well, symbolically, but I mean, I'm not opening a strip club or a candle store. I would open vocational training in those places. And I would say, kind of the same with the post office. Like, I'll give you 5 years. Let's phase it out. I feel like, there's no reason why we'll need it 5 years from now. They lose a lot of money. Let's put that money into training, or we could make them, they could make them a youth center, you know, like a place where kids could go after school and do their studying or do whatever. But I just feel like there must be millions of square feet of public library and post offices strewn all around this country, many of which are in neighborhoods that aren't fantastic. What if we phased them out over the next decade, let's say, and started in on the training or the after school center or the youth center or the whatever that thing is? I think I would be down with that. Because books, almost like mail, like almost has to be going the way of the dodo, right? I don't know. I feel like if I walked in.
You just released a book.
Oh, God damn it. If I walked in, it's not a library. It's at an airport where the important people read books. If I walked into any given library, if you guys went to the closest library to where you live, and you walked in the door right now, who would you find in there? I guess that would be the question.
I'll actually prove your point even more. I couldn't reliably tell you where the nearest library is. I think I know, but I have not stepped foot in there.
I agree. All right, I agree with us. One more, Teresa Strasser, because Patty Smythe is on hold now waiting for us.
Halloween is just 24 days away, which seems hard to believe, especially if you haven't been outside since St. Patrick's Day. A new poll of 2,000 Americans has determined the most iconic Halloween movies. Do you want to hear the top five?
Can we guess?
Go ahead.
If it has the word Halloween in it, it shouldn't be on the
Halloween's
list, right?
A dead ringer, right, for top five.
Right.
That is the number one.
Yeah, I don't know. Is all the classics, Nightmare on Elm Street and
that's number two.
Friday the 13th and all that shit.
That's number six. You're good at this.
Is Texas Chainsaw Massacre on there?
I'm sure that, yep, it's number 12.
All right.
I thought this was interesting. So They also polled 2,000 Americans for the creepiest theme song. And this theme song that I'm about to play you, you know how people have like a playlist, like athletes have a playlist before they have a big game?
Mm-hmm.
So this song, voted the creepiest, was also Kobe Bryant's song to get himself pumped up. Let's take a listen.
Mm.
So here's what Kobe had to say. For certain key games, I don't think I've ever said this before, this kind of makes me seem kind of psychotic, but whatever. I used to play the Halloween theme song over and over in my headphones, seriously. And it was important that it was Michael Myers, because the mask itself is void of emotion. It has nothing to do with pressure, nothing to do with hype, nothing to do with camaraderie. It's just stone cold killer. And I would listen to that song over and over and over to get, well, that's when you know you better run. It's going to be a tough night.
I do. It's sad but true that every single, I feel like one earmark of a great competitive athlete is to sort of decide that the world's against them and they need to attack. And these are not players on another team. They're foes. They're demons that are coming after them, mm-hmm. and they're going to have to slay them, you know. And for some reason, they just all have to put that into their own head. And without it, maybe Magic Johnson didn't have that. Maybe he had the theme from the Banana Splits playing in his head. Tra la 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 la, tra la 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 la. But so if I feel like that, I feel like Michael Jordan probably would have liked to hear the theme from what was it? Oh, Nightmare at Halloween. Sorry on that as well. All right. Patty is waiting for us. So why don't we bring it home? Do we have a bring it home for Teresa Strasser?
Yeah, I'm Teresa Strasser. That's the news.
Teresa Strasser and the news. Fuck you, CNN.
All right. Let me tell you, last but not least, about Madison Reed. Madison Reed, Mister, that is. If you want to get a little less of the salt and a little more of the pepper in there, you got to go with Madison Reed Mister. Now, Madison Reed has been around for a while, and the ladies love it. Lynette loves Madison Reed as well. But then what about the fellas? Well, thus, Madison Reed Mister was born. Easy to use. I've used this a few times. You don't have the shoe polish look. You have the natural look. You just put a little, get your hair matched up, put a little dollop in your hands, just kind of run it through your hair. And then you run through the activator, same way, and let it sit 10 minutes, rinse it out, and Bob's your uncle. Little less salt, little more pepper. Madison Reed Mister, right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com. And use code Adam10 for 10% off, plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Adam10.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk to the great singer, Patty Smyth, right after this.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.